With Live and Up Promo, you can print all the things to promote your event. Banners, signs, apparel, anything you can think of. Go to liveinuppromo.com to get started today.
Welcome to Breaking Bread. I'm your host, Terry Page. President Trump's address to Congress remains a topic of discussion this week. My question is, what were the Democrats thinking? For example, not applauding the accomplishments of a 13-year-old brain cancer survivor? I'm really confused at the behavior of Representative Al Green. The 13-year-old DJ Daniel is from his district. So to be fair, Green had been escorted from the chambers prior to the accolades being handed down. This includes Daniel being made an honorary Secret Service agent. But isn't it more effective to hear what a person has to say before trying to make your point? The House voted to censor the congressman, but Green says if given the choice, he would do it again. Let me know your thoughts. Hit me up on X at Breaking Bread 101. On a lighter note, we recently moved our clocks forward 1 hour. The way to remember this is you spring forward and you fall back. Why did we do this anyway? It turns out daylight savings time became a national standard in 1966 when President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Uniform Time Act. The goal was, the goal was a way to conserve energy. If it's lighter outside, you'll use less electricity inside your home, was the philosophy. But half of the American population would like a decision made one way or the other to leave the clock alone. Some are even pointing to health concerns, where hospitals report an increase in heart attacks that coming Monday or an increase in car accidents. So what are your thoughts? Hit me up on X at Breaking Bread 101. The Department of Justice says two U.S. Army soldiers and a former soldier were arrested this week and accused of selling military secrets to buyers in China. That can't be good. You can view the entire CNN story on our Facebook page. Speaking of China, a set of criminal cases filed in New York and Washington add more detail to what is being viewed as a booming hacking to hire the ecosystem in China. This includes targeting a wide range of Chinese dissidents, religious organizations, and media outlets. The incident went on to identify critics of China living in the U.S., the Defense Intelligence Agency, and a research university. But who are we talking about here? According to the AP, the intended targets in some cases were directed by China's Ministry of Public Security, as well as two law enforcement officers. However, in other cases, the hackers acted on their own to sell the stolen information to the government. What does it mean to you? Well, when these two types of crimes are taking place, to shed some light on how we can be affected in ways to protect ourselves is penetration tester and the man who has a development joke that he hasn't finished yet, Shadow. Shadow, welcome to Breaking Bread.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, Shadow, we have the U.S. charging Chinese hackers and government officials in what sounds like a broad cybercrime ring. First of all, as private citizens, should we be concerned? And if so, what should we do about it?
So to answer that directly, as a private citizen, you can be as concerned as you like. Personally, there's not too much you can do about it outside of your basic privacy kind of things, right? For instance, if there were some kind of new sickness out right now, there's nothing that you as a possibly non-healthcare professional could do. You just have to go back to your basics of washing your hands, of keeping, you know, making sure that you're not interacting too heavy with people who are infected, right? So the cyber equivalent of washing your hands are the basic things like making sure you're not signing up for too much stuff, you know, anything that's taking your data, making sure that you're sharing limited information online, using high quality VPNs, not ones that serve ads, ones that you pay for, known reputable VPNs. VPNs is a huge one, and all of those kinds of things. But truthfully, in the eyes of something that we would call an APT, an advanced persistent threat, there's not really too much you can do other than go back to your basics as an individual. This more hit companies. This is more of the company and government level that the iSoon hackers are going after. They're typically not hitting individuals unless you are very, very interesting or you have lots of influence over money, power, political something. Yes. So there's not too much to do as at the individual level, to be clear.
Okay. And the reason I was interested is I know at one point you were on a show last year and certain people were getting hit, like Home Depot was one example, and of course the Colonial Pipeline, and that did trickle down and it affected people in that manner. So I was wondering if this had a similar effect, but it sounds like no.
Not necessarily. Not anything bigger than what you normally see day to day. What made iSoon so special, you know, funny enough too, I remember seeing the leaks the day of, you know, the leaks on Twitter every single hour. People were like, oh my gosh, iSoon has this, oh wow, this whole big thing came out. Is this even real? Who here can read Chinese? And all this kind of stuff. Like, it was a whole big thing. But as far as how this impacts the individual, there's not really too much you can do, right? There's not too much more you can do yourself to protect yourself from this kind of stuff. They're hitting companies.
They're hitting companies. Well, what's the worst that could come of this?
So, to put it quickly, these people are what we call nation-state espionage, right? And what could come of this is anything. To put it in plain language, this was a group of hackers that China itself, the Chinese government, and even some Chinese entities and stuff like that, they would contract them to then go attack company A, government sector B, or something like that. And then when they did, then maybe they would pull that kind of information and do classic espionage, or I guess less classic in the digital days, but classic espionage, or even go as further into maybe a ransomware attack or something like that, right? So maybe they could lock up some files and demand a big, big payment or any of that kind of stuff. But overall, there's not really too much. Overall, though, how that would impact you is possibly some of your favorite companies would have some financial issues. Possibly some of the stuff that you sign up for may have your information leaked. But again, you know, there's no perfect way to say, I know which company to trust. Oh, this company isn't going to do this with my data. That company isn't going to do this with my data. You know, you can read the privacy policy of any of these companies, but again, that doesn't mean that they're impervious to getting hacked.
Well, yeah, I mean, the company could be well-intended and do everything they can to protect your information and themselves, but still, if it's sophisticated enough, as we say, coming out of China, you could still have a problem.
Exactly. Right. Now, let me just say something about iSoon, because they were so advanced. What made them so special, right? To be honest, you see cybersecurity and hacking news all day, every day. But what made these guys so special is that they were highly advanced, right? They would develop these, like, leave-behind devices, right, of someone who would maybe walk into a certain environment, and then they would plug it up, and once they plug it up, they hop on the network, and then they just stay in there for months, weeks, years, right? A long period of time, right? They had these leave-behind devices. They had, you know, certain switches and routers and all this kind of stuff that would actually have a back door and send information back home to wherever home was decided to be. They had lots of interesting hardware. Another thing, too, that I know is that the iSoon leaks, right? The reason why it was a leak is because this was all published to GitHub by a disgruntled employee that felt like they weren't paid enough. And they dropped chats. They literally they released chat information from different employees that weren't paid enough. They said, oh, yeah, we're underpaid for doing all this kind of stuff. Man, this is hard. We should be paid more, all that. And that is why, you know, them being underpaid and overworked is why they released it in the first place, which I just found to be really interesting.
So this is like retaliation in some respect?
Yes, they were mad at their company and they quit. And then they released all of these documents, which happened to be impacting international security. That is what happened, yes.
Okay, so all I had to do was give them a pay raise and we wouldn't have this issue?
I don't know that for sure. Right. I'm not going to say that, but it's literally once the chats were translated, it was very clear that these people were mad that they weren't getting paid
enough. They're angry. Wow, yeah. That's quite an incentive.
Yeah. You would think, I don't know, at least for regular citizens like me and you, we would think, oh, this is a double agent who actually was defected over to you know, insert your favorite country here. You know, they defected from China to here else or somewhere else, right? Or maybe, oh, this was extorted out of someone. Oh, no, this was stolen information. No, this is an employee that got mad and posted a whole bunch of stuff. And the stuff that they posted just happened to be impacting security all over the world. That's what happened.
So in theory, a quarterly review potentially could have solved the problem.
I don't know. Or at least getting that person more...
What's the name? Meeting expectations, exceeding expectations.
Oh, yeah, the performance review.
Yeah, your performance review, yes.
Yeah, or at least listening to the performance review.
Right, listening.
I'm not even kidding, though. Yeah, there were all kinds of things. But they had custom software.
Employee feedback. I don't know.
Right, exactly. But they had custom software that they would sell to companies for, again, spying. They had stuff for DDoSing networks. They had different kind of internet boxes and things that would... you know, when I say internet boxes, I literally mean either fake routers that were actually sending stuff home or things that would interrupt Wi-Fi or steal information from Wi-Fi. It was all different kinds of stuff.
Sounds pretty sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. They had automated, quote-unquote, automated pen test stuff, but it was being used illegally. Yeah, email analysis. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I also want to point out, in a separate indictment, two other Chinese hackers were identified, and this indictment included U.S. technology companies, think tanks, defense contractors, and healthcare systems. You mentioned healthcare a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Let's not leave out the U.S. Treasury Department. Mm-hmm. And also, if you want to see the names of the suspect, we have them posted on our Facebook page for those who are interested. But shout out the indictments. They're, like I mentioned, they're pretty sophisticated cyber threat coming out of China, mm-hmm. including hack of our telecom firm. And that gave Beijing access to private texts, phone conversations to an unknown number of Americans. Because we mentioned, you know, what can you do? But they were targeting some Americans. As you said, if they're important enough, they may target them. So this did include U.S. government officials and some prominent public figures. So I'm assuming they're talking about politicians and people with influence.
Right. And again, that is true. They did. Groups like that always will target people of interest. I'm, and again, maybe I'm assuming, but unless, you know, 100% of your audience or most of your audience are, you know, persons of interest in the government, which that may be true, you know, for the most part, your average person doesn't have too much to worry about, especially that they can control. However, once you're a government official that, you know, oversees markets, that oversees, you know, large amounts of stuff, or possibly a large company or something like that, then your risk goes a little bit up just because you are important. And you are right. Now I do remember they did have stuff that targeted both Android and iPhone as well to, you know, steal texts and stuff like that. And they did have zero-day exploits that were targeted specifically to intercept communications. It was crazy stuff. Just to see that their whole company was a whole big, and I'm saying this in quotes, but private investigator firm that was able to forcibly take information from other governments. It was huge.
With us today is penetration tester Shadow. And Shadow, you bring us some really good points about what happened here with these hackers. And I'm wondering, how did they get caught?
How did they get caught? So, and again, I'm going to say what normally happens. What normally happens is there's some kind of cyber attack, right? Somebody does something, you know, in the offensive cyberspace, and they attack somebody, right? Then what you have is we call these people DFIR analysts, right? And or digital forensics and incident response. This is the, cybersecurity equivalent of looking for the fingerprints, you know, using the UV light to find the blood stains and all this kind of stuff, or looking at the trajectory of bullets. However, instead, we're reading system logs. Instead, you know, I am a penetration tester, but I've done digital forensics in the past, and I actually still do from time to time. But my point is, instead, as a forensicator, you're reading system logs. As a forensicator, you're looking for what we call IOCs, or indicators of compromise. On a Windows machine, this may be some kind of backup file or volume shadow copy that I'm able to pull. This may be some kind of forensic indicator that someone logged into this computer and hacked something. This looks different on an IoT device versus a Windows machine versus a Mac versus Linux versus a cloud environment. It looks different, but at the core of it, you're looking for the quote-unquote fingerprints of what happened. Once you have those what happened, and you're able to pull together a timeline, then you can then prove, hopefully in court, of, hey, who did this, right? And you can get to attribution of who did this. Now, it doesn't always go to court, but you can typically attribute it to someone in the cybersecurity realm that is, that we have these trackers or tags. I think I've talked to you about this before.
You have.
That tracks these APTs. You know, you have APTs with numbers, APT5, APT28, all this kind of stuff. Some, you know, from different foreign nations, you know, Fancy Bear. I believe, I could be wrong in this, I think Isoon was associated with Salt Typhoon. Salt Typhoon is another one that's huge this year in 2025, doing a lot of damage, and they were last year too. And they're a Chinese nation state hacker group. Point is, I say all that to say this, that's what normally happens. In this case, you ask me how they got caught. They got caught because an employee posted all their information online. This was the easiest way. This is like
that
if a gang member were to then just post on the internet, hey, I'm a part of this gang, these are the illegal activities that we do, here's how we do them, and then the police are like, well, I don't need an investigation, I don't need to show up and figure out these things.
Hashtag, I'm a criminal.
Literally, that's what happened. And so it was just posted on GitHub for everyone to see, and everybody was like, wow, this is really advanced tradecraft. Well, you know, fairly advanced tradecraft. There are some governments that have even crazier stuff. But
meanwhile, the detectives are just like, Well, the State Department was offering like $2 million at one point to catch these guys.
To get more information.
Yeah,
right?
So you need more money. That's one way to do it, I guess.
Right, but what I'm saying is, normally what happens is, you know, I say we as in the cybersecurity community and digital forensics investigators, we have to pull together all of these logs and pull together all of these cloud logs, all of these machine logs, all of this stuff, and then sift through it, like, you know, to find the needle in the haystack or the rock in the sand to piece together what happened. In this case, we had a big head start by a disgruntled employee posting what happened. That doesn't happen often, which is what made this so huge. And then we, and I say we here as in the United States
the
intelligence community.
Sure.
I don't mean myself personally. But then the U.S. intelligence community then knew the word Isoon, right? They knew what that was. On top of that, they then looked at all of the, I'm sure they did, they looked at all of the Chinese clients, right? Basically, who was Isoon's client list? And they likely worked backwards from there. That's how they got here. I'm sure they did.
Plus, I'm thinking now you have suspects in custody, you can get additional information.
Well, I'm saying how they even got to the suspect.
How we got to this point.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. You ask me how do they get caught. Normally, it's this whole big game of cat and mouse. Oh, okay, let's investigate their C2 infrastructure. Oh, they sold their domain last week. Well, they left that domain last week. And so now they're switching TTPs. Switching TTPs, I just mean tools, tactics, and processes. This is basically the how, right? Whenever I explain TTPs to people, I usually say, imagine someone wants to break into this room or this building. Now you hire three different groups to do it. All of these groups are bad guys. One group is going to drill a hole in the ground. One group is going to bust the door down. And another group is going to open the window quietly, right? Even a fourth group is actually going to hire someone to walk in here and pretend like they work here, right? All four groups got in, right? One drilled a hole in the ground in the storage closet that you don't open. Another one just bust through the door so you can see them, but they went in guns blazing. Another one quietly opened the window, and then another one hired someone to walk in here, right? Each of those ways are ways to get into this room, right? However, they all have different tools, tactics, and processes. This is the how of what they do, right? Anyways, in the cybersecurity equivalent, there are 10-24 ways to skin that cat, right? There's a bunch of ways that you can hack into a machine. And what we do as, you know, the blue teamers, defenders, DFIR, whatever you want to call us, what we do is then we track how this group hacks versus how that group hacks. And it actually does help us track who they may be, right? Now, this does get more complex because some groups pretend to do what other groups do to, you know, try to hide themselves, but it doesn't always work. Anyways, I say all that to say, normally we trace these TTPs back to the original group, right? Again, in this case, we had a big head start because somebody just gave us half the information.
Thank you for that.
Right, exactly. This probably won't happen much again, right? This probably won't happen much again, which is what made it so easy to catch them.
If you're a professional criminal, you probably want to avoid such.
Well, if you're a professional criminal, what someone learned the hard way is that you've got to pay your people or they'll quit and rat on you.
There's that.
It was just so huge. And again, I don't read Chinese, which these, I guess not much of it. I do work in cybersecurity, so you pick things up. But point is, the day that the leaks came out, I remember it was all in Chinese and everybody was trying to peel through it. You know, we were all using Google Translate and it was just coming out on Twitter and there was thread after thread after thread of, oh my gosh, this is huge.
So was all this Mandarin just on Twitter or just social media in general?
No. So the original leak was on GitHub, right? Just to be clear, GitHub is a completely legitimate place where people post their code, right? I post my code on GitHub, right? The only thing is you can post stuff on GitHub, you can host things on GitHub, all this kind of stuff. But what somebody did was they just created an account, I believe it's called iSoon, and then they just uploaded all of these documents, right? I'm referencing Twitter because people then took all the stuff and put those screenshots on Twitter. It's just a place where a lot of the cybersecurity community hangs out. And it's all over. You know, there's cybersecurity people on Twitter, on Blue Sky, on Mastodon, and also LinkedIn as well. Twitter, though, has less, restrictions as far as what happens.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. As far as the post goes in Mandarin, it's not like it was on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the thing. Because of that, there was all these screenshots. And I remember that's what I was scrolling and I was seeing all this stuff. And I was like, holy crap, this is huge if it's real. Because the day of, I was just like, is this even real? I don't know. I don't want to comment on it if it's not. And then once it was verified, people were translating it. People were reverse engineering any of the firmware they could find. People were looking up any of the documents.
Well, yeah, we were quite interested.
Mm-hmm. And then many companies in the U.S., internally look to see if they had any TTPs that matched that in their infrastructure. And there were many companies in the U.S. that did have to see, oh wait, this printer isn't really doing stuff right because they were hacked by ISIS.
They were hacked?
5 years ago, right? 2 years ago. And, you know, that had to be quietly patched and dealt with because, again, that's the thing. Once you find out you've been attacked, it's too late. Because a lot of people think of cybersecurity as, you know, the ransomware, the big flashy stuff, or, oh, we're going to delete your files. But to be honest, sometimes a hack is quiet and it just stays there.
What we find is a lot of your hackers are quite patient.
Oh, yes, exactly. And so, you know, getting more into what I do, there is a lot of what we call red team operations. And these are more of your advanced penetration tests. That's a bit sacrilege to say, but for time, it's more of an advanced way of saying, hey, not only can I get into this machine, but I can intercept communications and look normal during regular business hours. And you would never know, right? The only difference is I write a report on how I did it. Right. Right. So that way someone who with malicious intentions can't do the same thing I did after the vulnerabilities are patched or fixed. Right.
Sure.
But, you know, the criminals, though, they will sit there for 5 years and watch all the money move, all the people talk, all the complaints in the Slack chats, all of the Teams calls. And then people will say, how did they know all of this information? Because they popped you 5 years ago.
You're just now finding out about it.
It's scary like that. And that's clearly what iSoon was, right? You have like ransomware gangs like, I'm trying to think, Lockbit, for example. The leader of Lockbit did get arrested. But I'm not sure if we talked about that, actually. But anyways, you have ransomware gangs like Lockbit, right? And again, they go in loud. They want you to know who they are, right? But then you have companies like iSoon or, you know, APTs that you never really hear much from, right? Until, you know, they say, oh, this was a 7-year espionage operation. And it was like, wait, whoa, they did this 7 years ago? And they're very patient. Very, very
silent. They're like, don't mind us. We're just going to get your information. Don't worry about it.
Right, exactly. So the stealth thing, that is a whole different level. That's when you see the world-class level of cybersecurity. You see your zero-day exploits. You see your red team type of, you see your red team style lateral movement. You see lots and very few IOCs. Very few IOCs from those teams if they do it right. And, you know, even custom C2 frameworks that haven't yet been fingerprinted because they haven't existed, right? But yeah, every hacker always keeps a couple of ODAs in their back
pocket. Now make sure you explain what that means, IOCs. And
Indicators of compromise. Yeah. Yeah, this goes back into that TTPs thing that I was talking about, of the tools, tactics, and processes. IOCs pretty much just means an indicator, this might not be right kind of feel. And eventually you collect enough of those and you know that there's an issue. But point is, they have very few indicators, right? Because they make everything bespoke. They don't use tools off the internet that have been signatured. They use custom type tools. And yeah, whenever I'm on a red team engagement, I use stuff that I've personally made or things that are very bespoke towards the engagement, right? So I'm sure they do that too. And again, it's a whole big world out there, but like I've explained before in previous episodes, there are different levels to hackers, and this is the highest level, right? These are people who stay quiet and under the radar.
That's why we're talking about it today.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that exposed them wasn't a mistake in their code, wasn't EDR catching them. No, it was an employee who wasn't paid enough. And that makes me laugh. That's crazy to me.
That in of itself is scary.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, their code was fine. They just needed to pay their people.
Pay your people. Mm-hmm. Shadow, people listening right now, how do they get in touch with you?
As far as getting in touch, you can just look up SSHAD0W. I'm on Twitter, X, whatever you like to call it. I have X, I have all the social media you can really think of. I'm not going to lie. It's really, I have shadow@protonmail.com. I'm on Signal, all these kinds of things. But yeah, if you just look up SSHAD0W, you will find me for sure.
We'll find you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us today. Real good stuff, as always.
Thanks. Got to get back to finding groups like that. Give me some luck.
You're welcome anytime. Breaking Bread is a production of Artists for the People. Follow us on X at BreakingBread101. That's break, the letter N as in November, Bread 101. Or catch us on Instagram, Breaking Bread Podcast. Check us out on Facebook or visit our website, breakingbread.biz. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at BreakingBread101. Give us a listen on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Listen Notes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music was composed by Ludwig van Beethoven. Breaking Bread was created by Terry Page. Success is when opportunity meets preparation. Until next time.